Your host, Parker, Dan, and Angela, slice and dice their way through the good.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
The bad.
You brought the devil!
There's a devil inside everyone.
And the ugly movies you love.
And you can't piss on hospitality! I won't allow it!
Hold your favorite films and franchises tight, because they aren't safe. In fact, it's already too late. It's time to dissect that film.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Dissect That Film podcast, a podcast that dissects the good, the bad, and the ugly of cinema. I am your host, Brett Parker. Joining me, as always, my wonderful co-host, Dan and Angela of DNA Gaming. Today, we are going through movies of 1986, once again, and it is my pick, and I decided to pick a movie that meant a lot to me, but also, the reason I picked this movie is because our guest today talked about it on one of his episodes on his show, and it got me all giddy and excited. So when we were doing this series, and it was pick a film from 1986, that was the one I was picking. So we welcome Paul from the Flicks and Friends podcast to the show for the very first time.
I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Hello, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here. First time caller, first time listener.
First time listener, yes.
Not a first time listener. But I'm excited to be here. When you asked me to do anything animation, I'm always going to say yes. But this one in particular holds a fondness in my heart. So I was really, really excited to be asked to do this. So,
yeah. And since I haven't said what movie we're covering, we are covering 1986's The Great Mouse Detective.
From Walt Disney Pictures, it's adventure.
We've got a moment to lose.
It's excitement.
Basil, look out!
And it's coming your way. It's the adventures of the Great Mouse Detective.
Smile, everyone.
He's Basil of Baker Street.
Amazing.
And he's teaming up with Toby, Dawson, and little Olivia to take on Ratigan, the world's biggest rat.
What did you call me?
You're a slimy, contemptible sewer rat.
This spring, you're invited to join the fun with Walt Disney's classic, The Adventures of the Great Mouse Detective.
I thought this was Winnie the Pooh.
No, I'm Winnie the Pooh.
We need to cover Blood and Honey. He needs to come back with the exact same fucking outfit.
I already did. I already did.
I refuse. Me and Dustin have had this conversation. That's the one that's on my veto list, that if he ever covers it, I will not be on the episode. Oh. Yeah. I don't know if it's clear, if I'm a little bit of a fan of Winnie the Pooh.
Pooh Bear, Winnie the Pooh Bear.
On my older podcast, we did our top five theme songs for cartoons, and that was on my top five. So
that's a good one, because I was like the gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Literally just about to say that.
You can't see it, but this whole stack right here is nothing but complete series of animated shows, and gummy bears is up here somewhere.
For what it's worth, I just ate a bag of gummy bears tonight.
Haribo
gummy bears are the best.
They're good. I actually like some of the ghetto gummy bears. They're pretty good.
I like the Dollar General.
The third world gummy bears. What were you saying, Paul?
I was like, yeah, the Dollar General ones. I like the Dollar General gummy bears. I think they slap.
Dude. Listen, if you partake of Food City brand, if you have a Food City here, like, not just, this is for anybody, it isn't just for the folks like in this.
It's only between here, Virginia. That's the only place that has Food Cities. It's only,
well, hell, I don't. But there's listeners. There's other people that listen to this. So I'm talking about, their gummy bears are very soft.
Sometimes,
like, you know, sometimes
why.
You get gummy bears, and they're like,
so like.
I ask myself that too sometimes, but anyway, no, just kidding. No, like, but we went to they're very soft, which is rare, because most gummy bears I eat are at least a little chewy. But we went to, where did Ridley get those epic ones?
Most store gummy bears are very hard.
Yeah, but we went to a place in... Is it technically in Sevierville still, or is it Pigeon Forge?
Pigeon Forge.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There you go. But it's right there on the... I don't think you crossed the bridge. Maybe you do. It's by the Walgreens. Anyway, there's the Apple Barn, and they have a candy shop where you can watch them make candy stuff, but they have these fucking awesome gummy bears. The best gummy bears I've ever had in my life.
I know a lot of people like the Black Forest ones, I think what they're called. They're like really...
They're pretty
really,
good.
They're like, to me, they're like fruit snacks. So I'm not big...
Yeah. I need Haribo. Haribo is my jam.
Haribo's good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
And they have the best fucking commercials too.
They're all talking like children. Haribo is also the only gummy bear recognized by NATO. That's hence the third world gummy bear.
Exactly.
And a background. Yeah.
We made it, folks. Anyway.
Yeah. So today we're talking about The Great Mouse Detective, which was released July 2nd, 1986, directed by many people, John Musker, Dave Michener.
Yep, that's right.
Ron Clements and Bernie Mattinson. It was written by 25 fucking people. No, I'm just kidding. It was written by a lot of people. Pete Young, Vance Gary, Steve Hullett, Ron Clements, John Musker, Bruce Morris, Matthew O'Callahan, Bernie Mattinson, Dave Michener, and Melvin Shaw. So a lot of writers on this one.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's technicality because of the, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, technicality. They all wrote different drafts of this.
Yes. So. Yeah. That's when you see a lot of writers. Yeah. That's usually why. This was based on the book series called Basil of Baker Street, which was actually the original title for the movie. Mm-hmm. But I guess the VP of the company at the time came in and changed the name. He was like, hey, we're going to call it, you know, how about The Great Mouse Detective? To which someone anonymously, who later would out himself for doing it, wrote a memo for the company with like, hey, why don't we change all the names of all of our most popular properties? So like just, oh, what was some of them?
Little Mermaid was like one. Not Little Mermaid.
So Snow White was Seven Little Men Help a Girl.
Cinderella.
Dumbo. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Cinderella was the girl with the see-through slippers or something like that.
Yep. The see-through shoes.
Yeah.
It was Jungle Book was a boy, a bear, and a big black cat.
Yeah, that's
Dumbo,
true.
Dumbo is the wonderful elephant who could really fly. And and Bambi was the little deer who grew up. But yeah, it was a big joke. And then the guy, Peter Schneider, who was the guy that they were kind of fucking with, he pretty much was going around the company trying to find this person so he could fire him, which it just turned into a big joke, and it actually turned into a category on Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Which was hilarious. So of course this follows right after the movie that we covered last month, The Black Cauldron, which was the movie that almost destroyed Disney Animation, to which The Great Mouse Detective was the movie that kind of helped put Disney Animation kind of back into a comfortable spot. It wasn't the tentpole that kind of bursted through the stratosphere as some of the releases later on, but it was the one that kind of was like, hey guys, we're still here. We still have a chance. Like we got something.
I made a little money on this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
This wasn't even the number one animated mouse movie of the year that year.
Nope.
American Tail beat this movie, but this was just barely. But it was, but this was, people weren't flocking to the theater to see animation. I think these movies are like in the 20s for the year, like, which is crazy because of how much it changed in the last 2-3 decades.
I mean, at least this one lost to like another good animated movie.
Yeah,
like I think American Tail is a really good one. Yeah. But imagine being Black Cauldron in Disney and you got beat out by the Care Bears movie,
which is awful. The Care Bears movie is terrible.
So it's like, what are we doing here? I mean, that was literally the killing blow almost for Disney.
And it also helps that this movie is right when they transitioned to Michael Eisner and Katzenberg was there. And so this was, it refueled like, oh, we can still make movies that are animated and make money. Also, it helps if we cut the budget in half and make you put it out a year earlier than we did. So, yeah. But yeah,
So this had a budget of $14 million and it made $38.7 million. So pretty successful. It made double its budget. So that's usually the kind of this signifier that it's somewhat successful. It ran at an hour and 14 minutes. This movie flies.
Yes.
Like, it's short and sweet. It's, I mean, that's the thing about this movie. It's not a super intricate plot. Like, it's a Sherlock Holmes story. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, Basil is just solving a case. It's like an episode of Scooby-Doo. It's like, that's what this movie is. It's not, you know, it's not like the Black Cauldron where it's like different places that this character's going, fighting different things, doing all this. No, it's Basil versus Radigan, and he's got his little sidekicks. Radigan's got his little goons. They're, you know, pass intertwine, they fight, and that's the end of the movie. That's what this movie is. But it's just so good. It's just so well done. And I love the animation of this movie. I love the idea of this movie. I love that it's literally just Sherlock Holmes, but it's a mouse. And he lives on the same street as Sherlock Holmes. He lives under Sherlock Holmes. He does the same things as Sherlock Holmes, playing the violin, you know, and all that. Basil himself is named after a Sherlock Holmes actor from the 40s, Basil Rathbone, who actually would return to do the voice of the Sherlock Holmes in this movie,
yep,
which is awesome.
It's from audio excerpts because he had passed away in 67.
Oh, okay.
They recycled.
I did see that. So that,
yeah, I looked it up too, because I actually knew who that was before this, because my grandmother is really big into murder mysteries. So she'd watch the old Sherlock, you know, Basil Rathbone and the old Agatha Christie stuff. What's his name? Poirot or whatever.
Inspector Poirot.
Bro, that's it. Yeah, she watched that. My grandma loved that stuff. So I used to see it sometimes growing up. So
yeah, so the cast for this movie, we have Barry Ingram Ingham as Basil of Baker Street, and as the voice of the drunken rat or drunken mouse Bartholomew, which if you go on IMDb, this actor is only, it only says Bartholomew under his name. You don't know. Like, I was like, I'm like scrolling through. I'm like, who the fuck is the voice of Basil?
Until you click on all cast and then it pulls it up. I did that last night. I was like, wait a minute.
Fix it. Go? Fix it. IMDb. Step your shit up.
IMDb is trash now. Like, it's so bad. It really is.
Yet that's where we get the majority of our information.
That's where I go.
Yay!
I mean, it's got the most pool of information that you can get.
It really does.
It's just because now they allow users to put trivia.
I know.
And that's the problem.
Which I know. It's like, it's as reliable as Wikipedia, which is another source.
There you go.
I use Wikipedia just because it's easier to use, but.
Like, oh, absolutely. It's formatted better. We have Val Betton as Dawson.
Do you know where else
he is from? Also the voice.
Sorry.
What did I?
The Sultan.
No. Yes. He's not in the original Aladdin, though. From what I looked up, he was only the voice of the Sultan from the second one on.
For Return of Jafar and on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me verify that real quick.
The King of Thieves.
It? Yeah, it says his voice was first used for the Sultan in 94 for the Return of Jafar, and he's been the Sultan for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6
I got so excited.
Different things. So
I saw Aladdin, but that's the TV show.
That's what I saw. So I'm guessing either the original actor died.
Let's find out.
Or he didn't, he just didn't come back.
Well, he also did. Did we talk about
his? He did. He was Professor Porter in Tarzan.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
He just didn't come back. He didn't die till 99.
Okay. I figured it's either or. It's usually those are your only two
pretty
general options. Either they died or they're like, nah, I don't want to come back.
I'm good.
He also did a voice of one of Radigan's thugs. We have Suzanne Palachek as Olivia Flaversham. She was, I think, 7 when she recorded her audio for this movie. So, and from looking at her IMDb, she didn't really do a lot. I think this was one of her biggest roles. I mean, she was a child actor at the time, so I mean, it could have just been a one-time thing for
yeah.
her.
Yeah, that's all she's credited.
It does happen from time
she's
to time.
She's fantastic, though.
She does.
Her voice is adorable.
Absolutely.
Candido as Fidget. We have Alan Young as Mr. Flavisham, who also was the voice of Scrooge McDuck.
Fuck yes,
Mickey's Christmas Carol.
He was Scrooge all the way up until he died, which was a couple years ago. It was fairly recently.
Yep. He was all the Scrooges.
He was all the Scrooges. Well, except for the reboot of David Tennant. DuckTales, David Tennant.
Oh, that's right.
I think
that's
he was in bad health at that time, too, though. So Alan Young was. Yeah.
We have Diana Chesney as Mrs. Judson, who was the name of the housekeeper, which I don't remember hearing her name, but I guess that was what it was.
Yeah, she says it for Basil's housekeeper, right?
Yes.
He says it one time. It's when he's like shoving her into the other room, like to get the cheese crumpets. It's during that whole interaction.
Oh, I must have missed it where he actually said her name. Eve Brenner as the queen. We have, as Dan said, it's recordings of Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, it even says archive sound
mm-hmm.
in the credits. So.
We have Laurie Maine as the voice of Dr. Watson in that same scene. They were going to try to use voice samples of the Watson that was in the same, who acted with Rathbone in those Sherlock Holmes movies, but I guess they couldn't get like good enough recordings to do it. He died in 1953. And another person I wanted to shout out was Wayne Allwine, who was one of the many voices of Mickey. He was one of the thugs.
Really?
He was Mickey for almost 30 years. So this is just it has a little bit off topic, but since we're talking about Wayne Allwine. So his wife was Minnie Mouse. They met while recording, fell in love and got married, and she passed away a year or two ago. He died in 99. Wayne Allwine died in 99. So he's been dead for a while, and it's been like four or five Mickey since then, but she was Minnie all the way up until
he died in 2009.
Okay. I knew it was a nine at the end of it, but but she passed away, I want to say a couple of years ago, but her last performance was those Mickey shorts they do on Disney Plus, the ones that are like really goofy and like almost Looney Tunes.
Oh, like that new animation style that they were doing? That kind of looks like the retro.
Yeah, exactly.
Look.
And the last one she did, it was a love piece where it was with her and Mickey, and they sang a song together. And it was about being in love, and that was the last thing she recorded before she passed away. But Minnie and Mickey were a real life couple for like 30 something years.
And they died almost 10 years apart. Yep. Aw. To the month.
Yep.
God, let's make this show sad, why don't we?
Hey, he started it.
I thought it was sweet that Minnie and Mickey were really, really together.
That is sweet.
Yep. Oh, man. So from what I remember from the Waking Sleeping Beauty documentary was the fact that this idea had been a thing since The Rescuers. And one of the directors that we talked about during the Black Cauldron episode was actually attached to this movie, but he ended up getting fired after the Black Cauldron.
Rip.
So they ended up having to primarily the two primary directors of this movie was John Musker and Ron Clements, who would go on to direct some of the most iconic Disney movies in its history. You know, the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and also Moana.
Treasure Planet.
I have to shout out Moana. Treasure Planet. Okay.
So,
Treasure
Planet. Wait, hold on. What?
Treasure Planet. So Treasure
Planet. Dude, I fucking love that
movie. So that was their love child. They wanted for years and years and years and years to do Treasure Planet. They kept pitching it. And then finally their success allowed them to make it. And it was literally one of the biggest animation box office flops ever, but like it was a very expensive movie and it made no money, but I love that movie. I think it's a ton of fun, but
I haven't seen it forever, but I like it. It reminds me, it's like I knew it was after, but it reminds me like aesthetically a little bit of Titan AE for some reason.
It definitely does. Yeah, I see that,
which is also not a bad movie.
No, underrated,
but
yeah.
Yes.
The music was done by Henry Mancini, who would score some pretty iconic stuff. Ghost Dad starring
I just dropped it.
I'm sorry. Jesus. No, but he would come up with the theme, the iconic theme to the Pink Panther.
Yep.
Oh,
you know, okay. Which is of course like one of the most iconic like films like themes, and then it would be a TV theme. He did Ripley's Believe It or Not, the original theme to that show. Remember? Oh my gosh, so good. Yeah, I'm sorry. The Ghost Dad was a poor joke. I apologize for that. Dude.
I think it's great.
Oh man. So Paul, do you have any behind the scenes stuff you want to add before we jump into the plot of this?
Far as behind the scenes, I don't know if anyone's read the books, but in the books, if I remember correctly, Radigan is not a rat. He's just a large mouse. He's a large mouse, I believe, that has changed for this. If I remember correctly, I could
call
be wrong.
Him a rat.
Sorry, yeah, he's world's greatest criminal mind. Sorry, but other than that, this it's been forever since I've actually read the book, but it's pretty spot on. But far as behind the scenes, I think you covered a lot of the good stuff. But the biggest thing is this movie was supposed to come out a year after it actually released. But the pressure to put a movie out and make money caused them to release it earlier. So they cut the budget in half, which is also another reason why this movie is so short. The fact that they got an hour and 20 minute movie made in less than a year drawing hand-drawn films is incredible. And to have it look this good is very, very impressive. I think that's the biggest thing is this movie. And that's also why, so it had four directors technically, it really only had two. So one was exited after they changed the dates, and it was Clements and Michener who were, I'm pretty sure it might be in Musker backwards, but it's one of the other, those two, it was Michener and one of those two were the directors, but because of the pace and they need to get this movie out, they added the other, so it ended up with three full-time directors. And I don't know if y'all probably do know what the animation process goes, but you have individual animators, the way Disney does it, for every individual character. So like, which allows them to put out these massive movies in a shorter amount of time. So
it also keeps consistency on the character.
Exactly.
Too.
Character model is very important. It's why Disney has always stressed that. So, and a lot of the animators on this movie went on to make all your iconic Disney movies, like to do major characters and Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, not so much Rescuers Down Under. That's another complicated story that you guys might cover on a different day, which is another movie that almost bankrupted them because they tried to do CGI on it, but that's a whole nother.
Oh yeah. They did the digital touch up at the end. It was like a post computer, like did the coloring.
So
shit,
they
right?
went through a whole brand new animation process that was computer animated. And it was experimental at the time, and you can tell they use it in the movie with all the eagles and everything, but it was so expensive that it almost ruined them as well. But
yeah, they talk about it very briefly in that documentary we watched.
There's a reason it's made by Disney and they don't want to cover too much of their failure, so that's why they kind of gloss. Yeah. They gloss.
We only one big failure for this movie, and then we'll go up from there. Exactly. No more.
But
yeah.
That like that's the biggest thing about behind the scenes. This is the rush to get this out to sweep Black Cauldron under the rug and kind of get back in the black, which this movie did. Without this movie, we don't get the Disney Renaissance. That's why to me, this movie deserves more credit than it gets. All the hard work that the animators and directors did to get this movie out when they got it out, as quick as they got it out, with the quality they got it out. And it saved Disney. This movie single-handedly saved Disney's animation department.
All right.
And that's all I got to say about that.
No, it won't be. You'll have more. I'll have more. Let us get to it.
All right, Dan, are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Are you ready? Is everybody ready? Paul has no idea what the fuck's going on.
Yes, so I listened to Silver Bullet. So
He knows what's coming up.
I'm going to get it right.
All right, here we go. It's never going to be right. Here we go. And now it is time to dissect
that film.
Yeah.
I wasn't going off this time. I'm just
kidding. So this movie starts with a little date. It is 1897 in London, and we are going to Flavisham Toys, where a little girl named Olivia is hanging out with her dad, cool toy maker, as he makes some of the most advanced toys I've ever seen that would come out in the late 1800s. The toy he gives her is so intricate. I'm like, how the it's fuck ridiculous. Did you make this in 1897?
Well, he's a genius inventor. Because of cartoons. Because of cartoons, yeah. That's why.
Yes, yes. Oh, because animation, you could do whatever the fuck you want, exactly. No matter what time it is.
I ain't no kidding.
I love that we have a problem with that, but not the fact that we're watching a movie about talking mice.
Nope. Listen, Paul, that's the name of this show, okay? We're going to point out everything that doesn't make any sense, even if we love the movie, okay?
Fuck yeah.
No, I just remember I've seen this a million times, but it makes me laugh every time he shows her that awesome fucking ballerina toy. Because you're like, that is so advanced. Like, just how it, like, I don't even know if they can make a toy like that now that would look that good.
No.
And how it moves and everything, it's way too fluid.
Like, does he have some reanimator serum or something? He's just jamming into toys and coming to life, or the puppet master serum.
See, Saris wouldn't have watched this with us either.
Why?
Because she told us, she's eight, told us when we watched the Great Mouse, or not the Black Cauldron, she's like, I don't watch cartoons.
Cartoons are for children.
She's like, too good for me. It. Like, I'm sorry.
No, because we've been watching so much horror, she's just been into it. She's just like hardcore into it.
But she doesn't watch that either.
What were we watching that she was like, while she was eating? She was trying to eat. It was something really scary we were watching.
The last thing I remember watching was Silver Bullet.
We were watching the new Winnie the Pooh trailer.
Oh, trailer, yeah.
And she's like,
Blood and Bitches too, whatever it is.
Trying to eat. Blood and Bitches. And I was like, you'll watch that, but you won't watch cartoons?
I'm going to edit a new post. I'm going to edit the poster for that movie. Blood Please. And Bitches too.
Please. Dissect That Film Presents. Winnie the Pooh.
Blood and Bitches too. I did do a reaction video on that trailer, so check that out.
Yeah, please do. And some other stuff. He's done some other stuff.
Yeah, I did. I watched that too.
Yeah, put that in your mouth too. You'll like it.
Go listen or watch.
It's a little salty, but you'll get over it.
Yeah. we also then meet the peg-legged bat named Fidget, who I love his voice. It's so good.
Okay, so I lied. There's more behind the scenes stuff. So, so Candy Candido, who did the voice for this, was a radio guy. It was what he's mostly famous for.
Yeah.
It's like of the vaudevillian era almost. But so when they recorded him for this vocal, they sped up his vocals. So that's why it's a little higher pitched. But there is one line that he yells in the movie that is Candy Candido's actual voice, but it's only one line. The rest of them is his voice pitched up. Like it's sped up. Mm. So that's how he gets that higher pitch. That's why you can hear it too, because they recorded on tape. So when you record it on tape, you can hear the speed up because it sounds unnatural. Almost the pitch does.
He was also in the previous movie that we got.
He was in what?
Is he Gurgi?
No, he was one of the Horned King's guards.
Okay, that makes sense too. Yep. Okay.
Dude, he was in fucking Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July. Fuck that movie, all right? Anything that involves Frosty, fuck that show. Even that time John Goodman voiced him. I'm sorry.
Frosty Returns.
Hey.
With a vengeance.
Can do no wrong. Okay?
I like John Goodman, damn it. But I fucking hate God.
Just put with a vengeance. At the end of anything.
Let there be snow. Dude, I'm like,
oh. So yeah, so this peg-legged bat, he kidnaps Mr. Flavisham and leaves Olivia there. And then we get our awesome opening with the awesome theme song. I love the theme music to this movie. It gets stuck in my head every time I watch this damn movie, but it's just so good. Then we get a narration from our dear friend Dawson, who pretty much talks about how he served in the military. He mentions he was in Afghanistan. We get that a couple times. I always forget that that was a thing back then, that the British military was in Afghanistan.
All over the Middle East.
We just take turns. It's fine. They'll be back eventually, too.
There's probably some sprinkled in there right now.
Yeah, probably.
And he finds Olivia in, like, she's crying inside of a boot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she is looking for Basil of Baker Street. And he's like, well, I don't know who Basil is, but I do know where Baker Street is. And that's when you hear the violin being played by a man in the window. You only see the silhouette. You never see Sherlock Holmes in this movie. It's always a shadow, which is fine, because I feel like it would just be too distracting if you actually saw him in the movie. I like how it's kind of just showing like the parallels of our characters
without being 100% on the nose about it.
Right. Like if you know, you know. Like, to be honest, I don't know if when I saw this as a kid, I like put two and two together that was Sherlock Holmes, because I wasn't really into Sherlock Holmes at that time. I don't even think I was into Sherlock Holmes until the Robert Downey Jr. movies. So
those were good.
What is the animated TV show from the late 90s? Was it Sherlock Holmes in the 23rd century or whatever it was?
Oh, shit. I think I remember that. Was that on the WB?
It was on, like, well, because we all live in different areas, but it was on C40 here because it was a syndicated show. It's a pile. It's a dumpster fire. But it's one of those one of those like random syndicated shows that like people are making super cheap to make money and sell it to local TV channels who didn't have cartoons. So
you mean like what was it? Mummy's Alive.
Dude, don't talk shit about Mummy's Alive.
Dude, that had a bomb ass intro, didn't it?
There you go. So Mummy's Alive is part of Bobot Entertainment, which made Sonic, the Saturday morning cartoon one.
Which one?
The goofy one. Not Sonic AM, which not that was on ABC.
It was the Sonic and Tails one that was dumb.
Yeah, the
right?
one with the chicken and the mole robot. That's the one that Bobot made. And they also made, like, you remember Captain Simian and the Space Monkeys? They made that.
I've heard about that one.
Dude, that cast has like Maurice LaMarche, Jeff Bennett. It was like a bunch of famous voice actors in that show. Sorry. I didn't mean to derail you.
No, no, you're fine.
It's not me this time.
I think what's pretty funny is that this movie kind of links up to young Sherlock Holmes, which was the live action movie that came out in 85. And because that movie was the first time that CGI was used in a film. And this was, I think, wasn't this the first animated film to utilize CGI?
Well,
like in that final scene,
Black Cauldron have CG?
Did it have CG or did it have
I'm pretty sure it did. That was why it was so expensive.
We probably did mention that.
But I think it was for a shot or two. We talked about it in the episode.
Yeah. But I know that there was like, this was like the biggest, the final scene of this movie, like inside the clock tower is like the, like it was like the longest segment of CGI that had been used in film. Cause it was like, I think in the Black Cauldron, it was like only like little bits where it was, you couldn't really tell. Cause it was mostly just compositing, where this is like full computer generated images, okay, like for the inside of that clock tower,
so also,
with the hand drawn characters.
So I lied again. So, with that scene was originally supposed to be just a fight scene on the face of the clock. And, they decided to, because that was almost too boring in a sense, they decided to add the element that you're talking about with the gears and the fixtures. And you also see the transformation of Radigan, almost like a werewolf, which is also, I was reading about this the other day, this I didn't know, but so rats have five fingers and the mice have four. So that's how you differentiate them. And it's the animation messes up in that transformation scene. You see Radigan's hand goes from five to one scene to four in his neck, then his other fingers go back to five.
Huh. Okay. I didn't think about that.
I just assumed they do. Rats are like,
well, they do.
Oh, they have different color tails. They have fleshy tails. Rats have fleshier tails. But that was one of the distinguishing things, and it was like an animation error. So
that's
one fair. I didn't know.
I owned fancy rats.
They hold things.
And their tails are
and
awesome.
They drink tea.
They hold things without... they managed to do it all without thumbs, and I was like, "What the fuck do these?"
Wow!
As long as they have, as long as they have pinkies, that's all they need. They gotta have the pinky.
Yeah, gotta keep that shit. That's what they always do. Ironically, it's like a genetic anomaly where they always keep their pinky out. Remember, when in doubt, pinky out.
I already said that.
That was from SpongeBob. Don't take this from me.
So Olivia and Dawson, they make it to Basil's home, but he's not there, but his maid is there, and she brings them in, is gonna, you know, warm them up by the fire, get some food for them, and then Basil shows up. It pretty much ignores them because he is focused on doing an experiment. He goes through all these steps, going through everything. Olivia's trying to talk to him, asking him, you know, to help her find her dad. And he's too preoccupied to the point where when he finally finishes, trying to match up two bullets and they don't match. They're off by just a little bit, and it just puts him out of, he's just becomes depressed, starts playing his violin. And because it was a way to connect, I guess, something to Radican, because that is like his life's goal is to finally put Radican behind bars.
It's the Moriarty parallel, right?
So, yeah, oh yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah. Because even this movie, is legit just a Sherlock Holmes story with mice and rats. So we also get lines that are taken from Sherlock Holmes, like when Dawson figures something out and it's like, "Oh, it's elementary, my dear Dawson," which is something Sherlock Holmes would say. And I love when he shoots the pillows and just the feathers go everywhere. And the maid comes out and she's just like, what the fuck? And she's like breathing it in. And she's like, oh, God.
I like when this makes me think of the meme where he hands Dawson the pillows and he's going to shoot them with a revolver. And then he like throws them onto the chair, which, you know. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that logic, even though that would be, this is what, 1897?
Yes.
That would be black powder. So I would have powdered up that room a good bit. Anywho, it makes me think of the whole, this meme online where two dudes got arrested in America for shooting each other to see if bulletproof vests work. Nobody got hurt, but they got arrested for it. And it's like, I'm sorry, I thought this was America. That's what I thought I was saying. By the way, this isn't America.
No, nope.
This is England land, so that's England fine. Land. The great city of the city of Great Britain.
<That's a> great...
Somebody's gonna get that reference.
Oh man! So of course, even with Basil in his depressive state, she mentions Fidget, which perks his interest because Fidget, of course, is attached to Radican, which is Basil's number one nemesis. Like he is 100% just wanting to capture this guy.
He's an emotional one, isn't he?
Who, Basil?
Yeah, he really is, dude.
He's bipolar shit.
Like when he's like bested, like he gets like just in the dumps.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how long he's been going after him.
Dude needs to go have
like,
some.
These guys are legit just like they hate each other. And it's funny he has a picture of him in his house. Like,
yep.
Like on that's fireplace. Because the mantle is like my nemesis. Isn't it? That's a great picture, isn't it?
I really like this side of him. I think this is his good side. Yeah. So when he goes to that we'll get to it later, that depressive session he goes into later when they're about to die. It makes me think of was it Adam's Family when Gomez Adams is super depressed and he's just singing Sweet Low, Sweet Chariot, laying in his bed.
Yes.
So then we jump over to what's Mr. Flaversham doing? And he is creating a robot for Radican. And we get to hear his beautiful voice, as I did not mention when we talked about the cast, because I wanted to save it for last, because it is the most iconic voice in this movie, and that is Vincent Price.
Yes.
And this was my introduction to Vincent Price. I did not know about Vincent Price other than the Thriller video. That was the only
Edward Scissorhands.
Right. Yeah.
Oh.
And that this was the movie that really introduced me to then his like his work, you know, House of Wax and House on Haunted Hill and pretty much everything that he was, The Fly and all that. His voice just was perfect for this role, though, and he loved it. This was like a dream come true for him. He'd always wanted to voice an animated character. Paul was sending me pictures of like him on the red carpet with like a guy, the guy dressed as Radican. It's so, and he has the biggest smile on his face.
You can always tell when an actor, actress loves the role that they're in. And this is one of those that you can tell that he is having the time of his life. You
know why this is his favorite role? They wrote two songs for him. He got to sing. That's why he said it was his favorite role, because he got to sing.
And he does such a good job.
He really does. But that was why he was so excited. He got to see. He said he would not have done this role. He had to try out for this role. He auditioned for this role. And he said,
oh, give it to him. I wouldn't.
He wouldn't even thought twice, though. He said, if it wasn't Disney, he's like, all right, I'll do it for you guys. He goes, I'll audition for you guys.
Well, see, that's the thing is, and I don't know when his stuff was recorded for this, but he was also in another animated show before this, released before this. Unless it wasn't a movie, though, so maybe that's what he meant. Because he was in The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo as Vincent Price, animated. Which is, by the way, a shitty introduction to that, because I think that was the first Vincent Price thing I've seen. I would much rather have been this one.
I always found it funny that when they remade House on Haunted Hill, that they just... Jeffrey Rush's character was just Vincent Price. Like, they didn't even change his name. Like,
Vincent Price.
Like, was Vincent Price's character in the original just himself? Like, was he just Vincent Price? Or the filmmakers for the movie were just like, no, it'd just be a cool homage to Vincent Price. It's like, no, you're just using his name.
No, he was a character. He was an actual character in that movie.
No, I know.
Not like as himself, but yeah.
No, I know he was, but like the filmmakers for the remake when.
Yeah.
Because Vincent Price was dead at the time that the remake came out.
No, but I mean,
Jeffrey Rush played Vincent Price in that movie.
Yeah. But character's name was Vincent Price in the movie, right?
Yes.
That was not correct. In the original movie, it was a different character's name.
So I was like, okay.
I don't even remember his character. There you go.
Don't worry, that filmmaker would go on to make a movie called Fear.com. Oof. But yeah, Vincent Price's voice is perfect for this role. He just just the way that he like accentuates words and just the way that they got him to move, the animation for the movement of Radican, it's so good, and his voice just fits it perfectly.
It inspired, though, the only downfall for me is like it inspired stunt casting for the next film, and this movie, I mean, he's the only name from this movie, and really the only other big name in any of the Disney movies ever got was Gabor for Rescuers. So like until this, it was kind of like the only real big actor they got. Everyone else was like bit actors, character actors, voice actors traditionally.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously the next movie after this one Disney did, you had Billy Joel, Cheech Marin, Bette Midler. You had like, it was just a lot of, which that's all Jeffrey Katzenberg. He thought that's what would sell the movie, and that they needed big name actors instead of just character actors, which they kind of went back to with the next few Disney Renaissance movies until you get to Lion King. But
yeah, because like Little Mermaid,
yeah,
nobody that you could,
Aladdin had Robin Williams. I would have known. Aladdin had Robin Williams.
Yeah, that was it. He's building a robot for Radigan. Because Radigan has a plan to kidnap the queen, because he wants to pretty much become king and he wants to be able to rule and do all his dastardly deeds. I love that Flaversham stands up for himself. Like, he like gets in Radigan's face. He pretty much tells him he's not going to do it. But of course, he threatens him by saying he's going to get his daughter, bring her there. And that kind of changes the tune. And it puts him back to work. I love the music they use every time they show this robot. Like, because it's always malfunctioning or doing weird shit. It's always got that same, that same little piece of music that they always use for it, where it's just like really fast. It's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You're like, holy shit. Yeah. And the thing's fucking flailing just, all around.
Just put so a knife good. In his hand. Yes.
And just the lines that Rattigan says, you know, he goes outside and he says, I love it when I'm nasty.
He said, Mr. Rattigan, if you're nasty.
So he gives Fidget a list of things to get, which the list contains uniforms, the girl.
I don't have the girl.
What was gears? Gears, right.
Tools, yep. I think, was tools, also one
yeah.
of them.
Yeah, and he's like, he's like, ah, you don't have the girl.
he raises it. Like, aww.
And this is when we get our musical number from Rattigan and his thugs, which is just so good. Dan, you want to give us a piece?
No, I'm good. I don't have the connection to memorize this song. So I don't think
the chorus is the most memorable part.
I love the
Rattigan. Oh, Rattigan.
I love the whole singing though. It reminds me a lot of Mary Poppins.
Very much so. Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah. It's very and classic Disney.
I kept my Mary Poppins shirt. I have it on.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
yeah, there you go.
I kept looking up the people. I'm like, they sound so familiar, but I couldn't tell if it was just because they were British. I'm like, somebody has to have been in Mary Poppins, and I was kind of disappointed that they were not.
That would have been what?
But that reminded me of it.
Almost 20 years apart, though, right?
Yep. Yeah, 64 yep. was Mary Poppins. But yeah, during the song, we meet Bartholomew, who's he's had a little bit too much to drink. I he's love how they include this part where the song stops and he's like at the fountain of booze. And he's just Rattigan. And he calls him a rat. That's what stops him. He's like, oh, sir, he didn't mean it. I swear.
What did you
he
say?
Didn't mean it. He's,
he called you a mouse.
He called you a. You're just a very large mouse.
Large mouse.
I called you a rat.
Yep. He's like, there's no shame in what I called you.
And that is when you get, to meet what's the cat's name? Felicia.
Mm-hmm.
Felicia the cat, Felicia. The big old thick cat. She's
fucking chunk, dude.
She's thick, but she can book it.
And she is summoned by a little bell. And yeah, poor Bartholomew, he gets gobbled up.
He's blitzed though. He has no clue what's
pour
going
some
on.
Out for the homies.
He's feeling anything.
I love how he's still singing the song though, as he's outside the place. And he's just sitting there.
No clue.
No.
And they go.
And I just love though they pick the song back up after he goes back inside.
They're like,
I love though that his friends, the other thugs, are like they're like with their hats over their heads. They're just like, oh, poor
and they start panic singing because he's like, you know, saying, oh, Rattigan.
Yeah, they don't want to die. They
I love that
better.
We have random lizards thrown into this crew too.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess this lizard is. Taken from Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
It was a lizard that shows up in that.
So there, one of the other Easter eggs, Dumbo's in this movie.
Yes.
As a toy, right? In the toy shop. Yeah. So.
I they have to plug all their.
Yeah, but at the time, they weren't really re-releasing. I mean, they started to, but it hadn't really gotten re-released.
I think Pinocchio was the first one they did the re-releases on.
Yeah, it was like a trial run.
Even though Snow White was technically their first film, Pinocchio was their first re-release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This got re-released in 92 though, right?
Yeah, I have the DVD from I think 2007 is when the DVD came out.
There you go.
So this one came out and
I had the VHS, but unfortunately I don't own it anymore. I have the DVD.
This isn't
the
92 run, obviously, because they re-released it again. It's when they were doing the vault, right? So this one came out of the vault at some point.
Yeah. Because from what I read is that Disney actually, I think in its first run on VHS, they put the title as The Adventures of the Great Mouse Detective. And then on that copy is when they took that off and it was just called The Great Mouse Detective. So it's like this movie had like three or four different titles throughout its
The Laserdisc had the same title as well, right? Because it came out in 92 as well.
Oh, good old Laserdisc.
Those are great.
Those are awesome. I want a Laserdisc. Dude,
you always knew science class was going to be awesome when they pulled out the Laserdisc.
Dude, so we have a toy store here, and somebody sold in their entire Disney Laserdisc collection, and they had them for like $10 a piece, and I was like, I wanted to buy them so bad, but I was like, they're gonna sit here. I can't watch them, because if you go to eBay, the cheapest damn Laserdisc player is like $250. So it's like
VHS players now. It's like, what the
Habitat
hell?
For Humanity. It's your best friend.
Steal from homeless people? Fucker can't watch it. He don't know VCR.
He got electricity. He can't plug it in.
Oh no.
Well, I mean, honestly, ours came from a house that the people had like tore up and left shit there. So
we had to leave it.
I don't even know if it works. It's just a VHS DVD combo upstairs.
I bought mine from a yard sale from a very sweet older gay man who was just trying to get rid of all his stuff. I was like,
best way to get it.
Old man, hand over the tape player. Sir, this is a yard sale. You don't have to beat me up for it.
Oh, okay. So this has a price. I thought we were here to fight for this. I had my shirt off and everything, just ready to go.
Pretty scrap boy.
So we're back at Basil's house, and Fidget makes an appearance outside the house, and they chase him, and they are like, "Well, before we do that, we got to go get Toby." Who's Toby? So you find out Toby is Sherlock Holmes's dog, which is pretty funny.
He just absconds with somebody else's. Sherlock Holmes' dog. He's like, I'm taking him today. Rents him out.
So good. And I love how Toby listens to Olivia over Basil.
Yeah.
Sit, Toby.
With her little... Sit!
Doesn't seem to care much for Dawson.
No, he hates Dawson. Poor Dawson. Dawson did nothing wrong. Dude. He's a cool dude.
Dawson probably smelled
Dawson. Bad.
Also, the fact that Basil breaks his own violin by sitting on it.
Yep.
He puts it in the chair and then sits on it. And it's like, why did you sit? Like, in that moment, I was like, why did he sit down? Like, aren't they leaving?
I guess it's kind of nice to make him as a flawed character.
Oh, yeah.
Not like the perfect, like, always on point detective. Like, I assume most people think of when they think of Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
I just think he hasn't hit his opium addiction yet. He'll get there, though.
He's just clumsy. He can't help it.
He's over there liquefying rat poison. And
He just got to go to one of the dens, man. Chase the dragon. That's what he used to do.
Oh, I know.
I don't say
pretty. That's pretty much what Robert Downey Jr.'s version of the character is. It's they have stated that his version of the character is the closest to what Arthur Conan Doyle wrote in the books. Like, just his behaviors and all that. He just doesn't wear the getup that his most iconic, the hat and the cloak, you know? He was just a dude who was really smart.
I'm just sitting here thinking, when did he get his steampunk suit on? Like, oh, it's different. Never mind.
Like, do you remember in the first Sherlock Holmes movie where he literally puts, like, a drug mask on the dog and, like, gets the dog high and it's, like, dead?
It's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah. You killed my dog! I love that movie. Another great score. He has a piece of, I think, Fidget's clothes, right?
The hat.
Oh, yes, he drops his hat. And then he also sees the mud prints. They already know who it is. So he's like, now I know who it is. It's like, but you already knew who it was. You knew it was the bat. The peg-legged bat.
Well, he's trying to figure out where he came from, right? That, like, so the whole experiment was he figured out he was salt water from a sewer. And that was the whole experiment. Yeah.
Right. Which is where they figure out where he stays, right? And
initially they don't do the saltwater thing. They follow him.
That's right. That's
his
right.
Tracks and stuff. They follow him.
Yeah, because that was
they do the saltwater thing later when they find the list.
Yeah, because it's after Olivia gets taken.
He said he went. Starts rolling it up.
Oh, man. So, yeah, we're at the toy store where Fidget is stealing uniforms off of toy soldiers. And this is when the gang shows up. And you got to love that those creepy ass toys from the from this time period. Just horrifying. This is a horror movie walking into this, like them, especially since they're mice, so everything is a lot bigger. And this is, of course, where you get your Dumbo Easter egg in this scene, and you get the creepy ass dolls. And
I don't fuck with dolls, dude. I don't fuck with them at all. And I'm glad that my daughter does not either. She thinks they're creepy and doesn't want them. So I'm like, thank God.
There you go.
I love, though, from what I read.
No, sorry, I should say she does Barbies, but she doesn't do baby dolls. Barbies I can handle. Barbies is in Toy Story.
So you walk by and the doll's head just turns and follows you. Oh my god, that would fuck with somebody. Put like a motion sensor in, like a doll, and just as they walk by, just
I would 100% do that. Especially since I know it was me who was doing it, so I wouldn't get freaked out about it. Imagine though, you're not controlling it that day, and it still turns. You're like, okay,
you're like, oh, but I thought I turned this, and you open it, the batteries are out of it.
Fucking Furbies, man. It just goes back to Furbies. Furbies were like, like people could say what they want, but I've had Furbies go off without batteries. Like, those things are possessed.
Have you seen Mitchell's versus the Machines?
Off on their own.
Yeah. Yes, it's so, that scene is so good.
Giant Furby.
I do love, I read this, and it was something I had never paid attention to in all the times I've seen this movie, but there is the scene that Basil tells Olivia that when they get to the toy store, she has to say nothing. Like, she has to keep, like, she needs to be quiet. And she doesn't speak the entire time they're in the toy store. The only time she makes noise is when she turns the toy on.
This isn't realistic.
You told the kid not to do something and they listen.
You told a 7-year-old to shut up and they're like, okay.
And it's just these very proper British girls, all right? Actually, she's Scottish, technically.
What she's doing?
Yeah, don't say it's the same thing. They'll get on you about that shit.
But I didn't say.
No, I'm just telling you.
He corrected himself.
No, I wasn't saying. I didn't say he did. I just said just don't say it. Like, it's just kind of a general thing. Get like stoned for it or something.
Yeah, she turns on the toy. It causes a lot of noise, and this is. And it's like, well, they already know you're here, so I don't know why you're telling her to be quiet now. Like, the toy probably woke up everything in that place. So they find the soldiers with the missing uniforms, and there's missing gears, and that Jack in the Box sounds like Chucky. The Jack in the Box starts laughing. It straight up sounds like Chucky. I was like, holy shit. If I ran into that, I'd be shitting myself. And I love Chucky. So this is when Olivia's taken by Fidget, because she goes up, she finds the baby carriage, and she peeks inside, and Fidget's in there. Throws her in a sack and bye. And Dawson's all sad now because he really liked her. He cared for her.
Because he tells that keep an eye on her, and he fucks off and leaves her alone by herself.
But they find the list, so they got something. So they'll hopefully be able to find her pretty quickly. So Olivia and her father are reunited, but it's short-lived, as they pretty much lock her in they throw her in a bottle with no air.
I was thinking the same thing.
They throw her in the bottle and close it. You're like,
it's like she's the kid.
Excuse me. She ain't lasting long. And also, it would have been more realistic if it was just start fogging up because she's breathing in there and there's no air. Olivia, is that you?
She
starts drawing things.
What is mustard? Because Musker and Clements do this again in Aladdin when they put Jasmine in a hourglass. A very common thread here. They're like putting in damsels in distress in giant containers of glass.
that's where they believe women.
Oh
belong.
No!
Not in the kitchen.
No,
in a glass bottle.
Well, the bottle goes in the kitchen, so I guess that's
it. Does see. That way they're never far from the bread.
I mean, they can't be far from the stove. They got to be able to tell time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true.
Oh, my God.
You can't say shit. She said it, not me. So anybody listens, like, oh,
I started it, so it's fine.
That's been the joke with me and him for how many years now?
Forever.
It's It's been over 10 years, so
that's our job. I don't know when we started it, but...
So, can you explain to me why Radican gets mad at Fidget for losing the list? Like, he got everything on the list.
Okay.
But he was mad that he lost it.
I think he knows how smart Basil is, and that Basil will put two and two together, which he does.
Yeah. But it's like Radican, like, I feel like Radican wants that final confrontation with
Well,
Basil.
He does. He sets
like,
it up.
He knows it's going to happen. Yeah. Right.
He's still got to get mad at Fidget, though.
Yeah, because he almost feeds him to the cat. Like,
he does.
Fidget is in the cat's mouth, and then Radican tells him to spit him out.
Which I don't blame him, because as much as he downplays, like you said, Basil, like, he knows how fucking smart he really is. Because all it takes is, like, one little fuck up, and, like, Basil's going to be right on top of him. Like, the list thing.
So. Yeah, when he breaks down the list to figure out where Fidget would be, or where he came from, or where he was, you know, that, like, yeah, it shows just how smart he is. Like, he's doing all these crazy things where I'm just watching going, what the fuck does it, what does that chemical have to do with anything? How is that gonna, and then it finally comes to the point where it's like, yep, it's salt water. So that means, where he was by the dock. And you're like, oh,
pipe okay. is right here. So, like, also, too, this is where the Radigan shows how much Mike Moriarty is, because he's always seems to be one step ahead of Basil. So mm-hmm. he's like, okay, I know he has my list. I can use that to my advantage and basically set up a trap for him. That's why they knew he was coming all along. So,
yeah.
Also, yep. I forgot to mention this earlier, and this is my bad. So, the design for Radigan, this is another behind, I keep lying about not having more behind the scenes stuff. drink every time I forget. But the design for Radigan is based off of one of Disney's head presidents who was a former football player. So, it was a big, burly football player, like stocky guy. And so, they based Radigan's design on him, because the design of Radigan in the books is more like you would think a brainy, Weasley type of bad guy would be. So he's more thin framed and so on and so forth. So this
he was thin and scraggly and dirty.
And this one he's
like Pinky.
Yeah, like Pinky. Just like from Pinky and Pinky in the Brain.
So they find they go down to the waterfront. They disguise themselves, which they just look like themselves. They just throw on different clothes. And Basil just has the thin pencil on mustache.
Fucking Dawson's got the belly shirt on.
Hell yeah, he does.
Can't even hold his pants up.
Like, and he gets lit during this scene. He gets drunk.
He gets poisoned.
And he's up on stage.
Oh, that's right. I think it's just a roofie.
Yeah, he got
roofie.
A straight roofie. Yep.
He said,
if you like roofie colada.
Well done, Paul. Well done.
This movie was supposed to be for kids, and we have a mouse burlesque show going on.
So, yeah, dude.
So they. Sorry. I feel Paul's about to say exactly what I was going to say.
This movie might have credited a whole generation of furries. So, like, between this and Chippendale Rescue Rangers with Gadget, and then you had Bucky O'Hare and all this.
Rock-a-doodle.
So this. Everything from this era, like, you start drawing these super sexy like animal women, and you wonder why our generation has the biggest group of furries that has ever existed,
says the guy wearing a Winnie the Pooh costume.
this is love, not lust. Okay, so
okay, he is making me sweat, because
you
I
have
know.
No idea
how hot
you have no idea. I have it is the fucking Everglades going on down here right now.
I just imagine there's like stalks, swamp sound effects, like crickets and like birds screaming is going on inside your pantaloons.
Gator mating sounds.
I'll get you, Gator Man.
He's gonna be like Basil's maid ringing out.
Oh, the hatter. She just flops the Winnie the Pooh suit like over the fucking rail after this is over, and just the bottom half.
At this point, though, I got chips all in, so I ain't no backing out now.
Yeah.
So, talking about the scene, though, they actually had to like tone down the song. So, they had a song, and then I think they had to change the lyrics to it to make it less seductive and sexy, because this one scene could have given this movie a PG rating, but they changed it, and they were like, well, it's a mouse, it's not a human, so it's not that big of a deal. I'm like,
so soap.
What the fuck does that mean? Like, because it's a mouse, it's fine.
10-year-old me is like, till my boner that. And I was gonna... My little mousy boner.
Little red rocket.
Yes, I was about to say. fuck.
Oh no.
You can also blame Sonic for like a whole generation.
Oh yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sally.
Amy and
Thank
Amy.
You, Sonic.
Yeah, Amy, that too. God. You had to be there for Sonic CD, bro. You had to be there. It was a wild time.
if we have any furry fans that listen to the show, we love you. Yeah.
Listen, we love you.
We
just
respect.
Stay the fuck away from me.
I'm not one to yuck somebody's yum. You do
what you want. You do what you gotta do.
Yes.
Exactly.
You do you, boo boo. So Dawson
sounds rather appealing.
So Dawson has clearly been drugged, and he's on stage dancing around causing a ruckus, and it causes like a whole bar fight to happen, and they're able to escape. And I, for some reason, I always thought that the singer was like becomes part of the story, no, but she never does. She just sings her song, and then that's it. That's all you see of her.
A late in the game character, like team edition. I was like, all right, they're probably gonna like double cross him or something.
So I had
whatever.
That Mandela effect too. So like going in, because I haven't seen this movie in a couple years, and I'm like you, I went into it going, oh yeah, I forgot that's his like love interest. And I was like, wait, nope, she's just a singer. But
it's
better off for it because not everything needs to love it. Love
oh
interest,
yeah.
So
this leads them after when the bar fight's going on. This kind of leads them to Radigan's lair. Which then they're, you know, Basil is, you know, just so happy about this discovery. But then he finds out that it was all a trap. Because they end up finding Olivia in the bottle. They find, you know, and everything is, you know, seems to be going the right direction until Radigan shows up and is like, yeah, this was a trap. This was on purpose. We purposely led you to this spot. And I love where it's not just what Dan,
the whole party they throw.
You're just I'm not laughing about that.
He's got the banner. It says "Welcome home, Basil."
I like that, but you're talking about this being a trap. Like it was a trap the whole time, and the lady singing was actually a man. Like
she's a man, man.
It's like, oh, it's a trap.
It was a trap. It's a trap.
It's a tarp.
She's like, I want to be loved by you.
Is that really low note? Like, that seems odd. Anyway, carry on.
So.
Watson's like, this isn't a deal breaker yet. Keep going. He was in the military.
He said,
guys,
tell me more.
I am intrigued.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's not just Basil coming up with a quick solution to the trap that was, you know, put upon him, where he literally becomes defeated. Like, he knows he's done. He literally goes from, like, super excited to just completely just drained. They get tied up on a mouse trap. It's like this whole Rube Goldberg fucking machine going on here with all the things.
I love this city.
It's Mousetrap. It's Mousetrap.
Yeah, I love the explanation, though. He's like, I thought for years and years and years how I would kill you and all these different devices. He goes, but I couldn't decide on one, so I'm using them all.
Yeah, so perfect, dude.
Oh, it's fantastic. And of course, you have Dawson, who's trying to convince Basil to, like, hey, man, you're smart. We could figure this out, right? And he's just like, no, this is it. We're dead. I got nothing.
This is
left.
The other Vincent Price song, right? When he plays the record, that's Vincent Price. Yeah.
Yes. Which, yeah, this was just the song was only sung on the record. It wasn't. He never sings it like as the character. Which to be honest, great addition to a torture device is having your prisoner listen to a song sung by his worst enemy.
Genius.
It's brilliant.
And it hits that moment. It's like, girl, you know, it's girl, you know, it's girl. You know.
stuck.
So Flaversham has finished the robot. It's a replica of the Queen because it is delivered to the Queen. And I love, again, we get that fucking music when it pops out of the box. I love how it has the cord. I'm like, yeah, it's 1897. This shit ain't cordless. Okay. It's gotta be plugged into something.
I just love that too. Like the whole time, the, how dumb the audience is. Like it, at no point, oh, anyone's like, oi, that's not a fucking Queen.
Why does it sound like a robot?
Oh, dickhead. It's like,
then you go back down to the pub.
It's like, it's like,
yeah. The Queen. I am naming Radican my consort.
The Queen has Tourette's. I don't understand what's going on.
Is she okay? She is shaking a lot. As she, is she,
got
part,
she got Parkinson's.
Rough.
Oh, that wasn't where I was going with that.
Rough. Bubbling.
Oh, no. This is one star review. I can smell it.
I'm about to say, look, I want to appreciate you guys for having me on my one and only appearance. I'll be allowed on here.
Oh, no. This just makes you want you have to come back more. Great.
One love, everybody. We love you all.
Michael J. Fox is great.
These are jokes. Let's. No, I was gonna say it's. She's shaking so much. Some guys in the audience like. I want what she's having.
Yeah, right. Do that, or she needs a drink to calm her down. Maybe she's not one for speeches. I don't know.
So this is the King's Speech. If anybody gets that obscure early British history reference / biopic.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, because he had a bad stuttering problem. Yeah, and he had like Queen overcome that. That's right.
That was correct. Elizabeth's father, correct. Right? Yep. Yeah.
Jeffrey Rush is in that movie.
He is. We're just tying everything together here. So yeah, Basil figures out the trap to release them all. I love how he sets everything up to the point where the axe comes down and splits the mouse trap in half. And yeah, the robot queen appoints Radican hit her the consort. And yeah, again, crowd's dumb as hell, just staring into
it's like the crowd of Monty Python when they're trying to convince the chick is a witch.
How do you know she's a witch?
Because she looks like
she
one.
Turned me into a newt. I got better.
I quoted that at work the other day. It was great.
Funny thing is we're going to be covering a Monty Python movie this year, but it's not that one.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, the funny thing is, it's like, how could, I mean, I'm sure they existed in some way, shape, or form to some people, but would even a majority of people even understand the concept of a robot?
No,
probably not. Not in 1897.
No. It's like clockwork people, dude. It's like that motherfucker from Return to Oz.
TikTok.
Yeah, that son of a bitch that turned it into an app. That movie is
nightmare fuel. But
it's pretty good.
Hey, we have an episode on that.
I commented on it too. It was nightmare fuel.
Yeah, we have a rude ass guest on that one too. Just kidding.
No, she's not.
No, I'm just kidding.
Dan, these people are not going to want to come back on the show. It's not the fact that we're not going to invite them back. It's they're not going to want to
come. At this point, no, I just know.
What you don't know is I like it rough. So I'm glad I'm here with Dan.
Whoa. There
you go. Hey, you know, he keeps him coming.
He likes it with no lube. So this is when we get the Toby scene where he chases the cat down the street. I love where the cat thing said she outsmarted him, and then she jumps and it's the royal dogs. she gets attacked. So bye, cat. Basil spoils Radigan's plans. He takes control of the robot, says things that... it's very much like the Penguin in Batman Returns when Bruce Wayne is able to take over the recording and it says bad things and turns everybody against him. And so, yeah, this is what starts the final showdown between Radican and Basil as they fly off. Well, Radican flies off in his cool freaking hot air balloon thing or blimp. Yeah, the little blimp. And then I think Basil has what they have a balloon, right? It's like a balloon.
Yeah.
with the cloth on top.
Yeah, they just recycled Radigan's ship vessel for Rescue Rangers, so it's fine.
not where I thought you were going with that.
It's not all bad.
Oh, and also I forgot to mention that Radigan takes Olivia as this happens. That kind of what causes the whole chase. So they link up, they fight at Big Ben, and they fight inside the gears of the clock, which is awesome. And I know that you mentioned the fact that originally the fight was supposed to only take place on the face of the clock. I love that it's inside the clock, because it's the only sounds you get are the sounds of the gears in the clock. And then you hear, like, as they're fighting, it's like the thumping of them hitting the floor or whatever. There's like no dialogue.
And that gear animation is like, you know, people just would see it as a background, but that gear animation is some of the most difficult animation in the entire film. And it looks awesome, and it adds a lot of depth to this fight aesthetically. Like, it just looks awesome rather than just being on the face of a clock the entire time.
Yeah, because this is, as you had mentioned before, Paul, is the fact that this is where we see Radigan's transformation. And you said as a kind of, it's reminiscent to a werewolf, but it's more of the fact that throughout this movie, he always states he's not a rat, but this is where he fully turns into a rat. And the thing is, it's not his fur that kind of looks like fur, but it's his jacket that's just torn up that is giving that like fur appearance. And also
his kind of talons too, his claws grow.
I mean, you could kind of mix both of it, being the fact that he is transforming into a rat, but it's also in that same form as maybe he was a mouse, but now he is like the rat is his version of a werewolf, maybe. And
where rat?
I don't know. Yeah, where rat?
My biggest complaint with this is I've seen clock towers before in the media I've grew up with, and there ain't no motherfucker running around with a whip, and it's not filled with Medusa heads. So this is the most inaccurate clock tower I've ever seen in my entire life. Somebody's gonna get this. See, Paul gets it. Parker's like, what?
I'm confused.
Castlevania.
Oh.
The clock tower level's notorious for being filled with Medusa heads. And they knock you off the cliff and you fucking die or you turn to stone. Yes.
Fantastic. Good music,
though. The only Medusas I ever fought in a video game was in God of War.
Series,
so.
The Gorgons and shit.
Yeah. So yeah, they fight. And the bell chimes, which is what causes them to fall off the clock. And of course they fall. And Radigan falls to his death, but Basil is able to somehow procure the end of his ship and bicycle his way with the propeller at the bottom, get himself up there and survive.
I could be wrong, and I was I read this somewhere, but I think this is the first on-screen falling animated death.
Since the Evil Queen.
Yeah, and Maleficent was the other one too, right? So like,
I don't think she falls.
She gets stabbed.
She gets stabbed because she's a dragon.
But yeah, so like, so it'd been a lot, like 30 years since they had done. Oh, Evil Queen is 19. That's 1937.
Was it 1939? Was when first Disney movie?
Okay, 39. So 40 is Pinocchio, right? Yeah. So okay. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And then 41 was Fantasia. Basil is dead.
No, Basil's alive.
Or not Basil. Basil's alive. Radigan is dead. Basil survives. And
they should have both died.
I love the end shot, though. I got a little nervous because he's flying this thing that has a very sharp propeller. And he's flying really close to a balloon. I'm like, this is just bad. Imagine he just hits it. They all just fall to their deaths. That's how the movie ends. You're like, shit, no.
And it has that happy music at the end, too.
Yeah.
The theme music. Oh. And the end is everybody kind of going their own ways. Olivia and her father go off somewhere. I don't remember. I think they say where they're going. I just don't remember where.
Create a toy store or something like that.
But it wasn't in London, I don't think. I think they were going And Dawson's going to leave, but then Basil pretty much makes him his partner. And
when they're about to start a new case, like another woman walks in and they're gonna start a new case.
Yep. Yeah. I would love to see more. I mean, this, to be honest, I would have loved to see like an animated series based on this where every week was like a different case. It was probably, there was so many Disney animated shows that were happening, like especially in the 90s, where I was like, this would have been perfect. I would have watched the shit out of this if it was a TV series, even if the animation wasn't as good, because it's usually how it works for the series that were based on like these
Aladdin's
popular
the exception,
you know, films.
The Aladdin TV series was so fucking good. It is the only one that is not on Disney Plus.
So yeah. Disappointing.
I remember one thing.
So
the reason
not on there is because of all the fucking pop culture references that the genie makes in the TV show. They can't get the licensing to all those rights, and so they can't put it on Disney Plus, and they can't sell a DVD. There's no DVD of it. The only physical releases of that television show are 9 VHS, each with 3 episodes on them, and that's not even the full series.
Oof. That's rough.
Pisses me off.
So that is the end of The Great Mouse Detective. So let's go around and talk about our final thoughts on this movie. Let's start with Paul.
I love this movie. This was one of the, you know, first 3 or 4 animated films that I fell in love with. It's because I was like 7 when it came to VHS, and my grandma would buy every Disney VHS that came out. And so it was like this, Chipmunk Adventure and Brave Little Toaster. I wore out those 3 movies.
Yeah.
So this movie's awesome. And like I said, I definitely have an affinity for it, and more so now as an adult, because without it, we don't get a lot of classic Disney films that came after this. So this movie needs to get more respect for what it did for the company and did for our childhoods, because I think a lot of our childhoods were structured by some of these movies that came after this. So, but yeah, I love this movie. It's a classic, and it's a hidden gem for a lot of people, honestly, who haven't even seen this movie. And that's all I got to say about that.
Who wants to go next?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. I love this movie. It's one of those that we were talking when we watched it. It's like, I don't remember watching this as a kid, but I know I did, because there's parts of this movie that I remember seeing that it's not something that you can just look up and be like, oh, that's part of that movie. As soon as we watched it, I'm like, I want to watch it again.
And the thing is you could, and you would still, it would still be less time than most fucking movies that come out now.
It'd be 2.5 hours. Yes.
And the parts that I know I saw are the parts that I remember laughing at, and I still laugh at them. They're great.
I actually, this is my first time watching this movie all the way through. I didn't watch it growing up. And I know it's weird. Like, I watched a shit ton of these like animated movies and stuff, like just from my parents, like, you know, it just popped up on here. Like, I watched, you know, the original Robin Hood and Jungle Book and shit like that. And I don't remember. And I know I've seen bitches of this, like bits and pieces. I can't talk. Mainly the clock tower, right? Maybe the clock tower scene. I remember being inside the clock tower, and I used to see people talk about that scene specifically a lot because of the heavy CG use at the time. But no, it was good. I enjoyed it a lot. I did not even realize Vincent Price was in this at all. And of course, like most people, I love Vincent Price. And it was really good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm glad. I mean, the length was fantastic. Like, he just knocked this sumbitch out. We got done. We were trying to time it when we watched it and like checked it. And I was like, damn, that was only 1 hour and 15 minutes. I got extra time. So it was nice. It was good. And it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it a lot. I know this came out at the same time, but it makes me think of Feifel or The American Tale. But I always, whenever I think of American Tale, I always think of the sequel, because that's the one I watch more. But yeah, it's good stuff. Definitely watch it if you haven't. It's totally worth it.
This is my second. This is top 3 Disney animated films for me. I mean, The Lion King will always be my favorite. It's just, it holds. It's always will have a special place in my heart. And this is like very close second. Like I watched this so much growing up. I probably wore the VHS out. It's so simplistic, but it's just so entertaining. I love the music. I love the voice acting, especially Vincent Price just hamming it up as Radigan, and just the animation is just beautiful. Yeah, I mean, there's not much more to say other than I love this movie. I love this movie so much. And the fact that listening to, I don't remember what exact episode you mentioned it on, Paul, on your show.
I think we were talking about Vincent Price or something like that at some point, I think with Charlie and them, and that came up, and I told them, I was like, y'all don't realize that Vincent Price is in this movie? And they're like, no fucking way. They didn't even realize it.
Right. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And as soon, that was, you know, we had this whole idea planned of doing our, each for 3 months, doing each of our birth years, covering movies from those years. And as soon as you mentioned in that episode, I was like, well, I know what my 86 pick is, because I just love this movie so much. And I know there's not a lot, like going through the plot was kind of difficult for this, because like I said, it's not super intricate. There's not a lot going on with this movie. It's very from point A to point B. You know, there's no side quests or anything. It's kind of just, it's cut and dry, but it's beautifully done. And for the hour and 14 minutes that it is, it does everything perfectly. It doesn't drag on in any place. And yeah, I love it every time. It's just such a fun movie. I probably watch this movie 2 to 3 times a year, because it's just such an easy one to just throw on whenever. And, you know, having young kids, I could throw it on anytime and somebody's going to enjoy it. Usually it's just my wife.
Usually it's just,
my kids are just like, I don't
usually
fucking
just
care.
Me.
Or Barker's wife.
On the couch like this.
Yeah. And it's always scary when we're doing episodes on movies that I like really love, like, because I'm like, I want to do it justice, and I know it's probably going to be okay, but it's like, after we're done recording, I'm going to be like, could have done better. I could have mentioned this. I could have done this.
Yeah.
But you know, that's just the way it goes. I think that's what I love about doing the show, is the fact that we're just having a conversation, just talking about the movie and adding, you know, the great facts provided to us from IMDb or Wikipedia or great doc. I mean, we actually and bringing some information from a great documentary that people need to check out called Waking Sleeping Beauty, which is on Disney Plus right now, which is a documentary that Paul actually mentioned to me, which I've had seen on Disney Plus. I just hadn't dove into it because for some reason, I think it came out in like 2010. So it had been like 13 years since it came out. And so it was one of those like time, and like it's been so much time since then. And I really didn't look into what it was about fully. So it was kind of turned me off, but I'm glad that Paul told me to watch it, because it definitely helped, especially between this episode and our Black Cauldron episode. All right. Now we are going to our favorite segment, which is going over to social media and reading all your wonderful comments on what you thought of The Great Mouse Detective. And we are going to start over on X/Twitter. And we're going to start off with our good friend Darren from NostalgiaCast, who left us a nice excerpt from his blog, as he did for our
He would have a fucking blog.
Yeah, as he did for our Black Cauldron episode, he left us his blog post on that. He left us this, so I have to read it. It's a long one, but it's a good one. So, how it holds up today? I don't have a problem with this one. To tell you the truth, it's energetic and smart. It's reasonably well plotted, and the animation is a definite improvement over The Rescuers and Fox and the Hound, despite the appropriately dreary and fog-bound London setting. Something I didn't mention, this movie takes place all at night. There is no inkling of daytime at all in this movie. I like that it plays out against an actual Sherlock Holmes adventure, and Vincent Price, Professor Radigan, is splendidly flamboyant and scary. In retrospect, though, The Great Mouse Detective feels like a stepping stone to bigger and better things. The songs, two by Henry Mancini of Pink Panther fame, the other by Melissa Manchester, who was the woman who the singing mouse, are robustly performed but don't have much of a bite, and the colors bear too many signs of desaturation and smudging when seen in close-up. It would take another 3 years for Disney to reach the meteoric heights of The Little Mermaid, also directed by Musker and Clements. Paired with The Black Cauldron, Detective caps what is possibly the most significant 1-2 punch in Disney history. An unmitigated commercial disaster followed by a sudden corrective step in the right direction. For a moment there, it seemed as if Disney animation's renaissance was actually afoot. So thank you, Darren. We always appreciate your responses to what we're watching. But we got more, which is lovely. Our next one is from Cinema Medicine Podcast at Cinema Medicine, who says, this is actually my favorite Disney animated film. I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, and Basil of Baker Street is awesome. Combine that with the catchy Rattigan song, it will always be secured in that number one spot. Next one is from the Creative Control Podcast, or at CC Movie Podcast, a truly underrated and often forgotten Disney film. Professor Rattigan deserves more respect. I loved this film when I was growing up. We got one from Screen Nerds Podcast at Screen Nerds Pod, who just said another fun, underrated Disney animated film, which is, I feel a lot of people's responses is just the fact that, like, this is very much an underrated film. Not a lot of people talk about The Great Mouse Detective when they talk about Disney, like Disney greats. Like, this to me is a Disney great. It, even as simplistic as it is, it did something as Darren states in that post, the fact that it was the stepping stone to the bigger and better things, which is what people mostly remember. I think it fits in more.
Like the level of like Jungle Book to me, like that same style, the pacing, mm-hmm. the length of the movie, and to me it fits that way. Like the ones that the blog mentioned earlier, like Fox and the Hound and all that, a lot of that was the end of the Xerox era, which is why that animation doesn't look as good. And why this looks much better. So
we got one from this Paul guy. He just says, I'm ready for this. And I was like, no, oh, I don't know what you're ready for, pal.
He lied. I'm just kidding.
He's like, this was quite disappointing.
He's breaking the seal. Don't do it.
Our next one is from Moments in Time and Space at Moments in TAS. Not sure why Disney ignored this film, as it was very good. It was fresh take and the performances were top notch. I don't think it gets enough love. We agree. Over on Instagram, we got one from Izzy Kicks, who just said, it's so excited to listen. Hey, we hope we don't disappoint. And from Team TNA Podcast, who just said, throwback in all caps. And I was like, all right, you don't need to yell.
Well, are we going to throw it back? Is that what they're talking about? Or the
yeah, let's all just stand up and just throw it back.
No, nah, man, I got the cheeks to throw back, dude. I'm sorry.
Oh, lastly, I think let me just double check threads. I think I've got.
Yeah, go watch the YouTube video to see if I actually throw it back. You'd find out, or anybody else.
We got one from our friend Ashley from Lullaby the Fear Podcast, who just said, "Toby, sit."
Yep. We're already sitting, lady. Calm down.
And I mentioned the fact because it's, of course, that line from Olivia. And I was like, her accent is so adorable. She says, I agree. The only reason I was introduced to that movie was because my mom told me Vincent Price was in it and I lost my childhood mind. And he just made things better. And our last one is from Contrarian Prime over on Threads, who said, caught this one in theaters as a little kid. Remember liking it. But also completely missing the point that it's a riff on Sherlock Holmes. A lot more enjoyable as an adult. So thank you to everybody who left us a comment on the movie. Make sure to follow us on all the major social media apps as we post like this. Every time we talk about the movie, we're going to be covering. So usually it's the day before our record time. Just check, you know, follow us and turn on that bell so you get all the notifications so you can leave your comments, because we love reading them. We really do. So we thank you for that. And now let's mention what next week brings. Next week brings another guest and another fucking banger. Next week, we welcome back Joey, or the official Joey C, as we celebrate a little holiday known as St. Patrick's Day, as it is year two of our journey through the Leprechaun films, as we will be talking about Leprechaun 2.
I'm the Leprechaun. Quit it, Wade.
We are so excited to bring Joey back since he is our unofficial holiday guy. We just bring him on to talk about holiday movies. That's just kind of how it works. But yeah, we are excited to bring him back and talk about Leprechaun 2, because talking about Leprechaun last year was a lot of fun. So I can't wait to see how this one goes.
Yeah.
But before we get into our final rigmarole of the show, Paul, thank you so much for being here. It
was an absolute pleasure.
It was an honor having you on. It was nice to not have to deal with Dustin this time. I just deal with him too much. You know, he's just like, hey, can we work together again? Can we do stuff? No, I'm just kidding. We love Dustin here. You
have officially popped my guest cherry. So I have not been guested on anybody else's podcast. So this is the first one.
Well,
so Dustin's worse than Parker.
Well, all I know, Paul, is that you stated that you are always down to talk animated movies. So maybe we make you we'll just make you the animation guy. You know, anytime we talk about an animated movie,
you gotta do is just let me know when and where. I will always I beg my guys to talk about animation all the time, but Sean hates animation and I gotta pull that's also true. Everything. I gotta pull Dustin. Yeah. Dustin's more willing to do it now, but for the most part I usually got to twist both of their arms to do some animation. That's why they let me have an animation month last year, so I was very, very excited.
Aww.
I made Western
Princess
animation?
Mononoke last year, so I actually have a Princess Mononoke tattoo, so I love Studio Ghibli, but I love all animation, but they're the only ones that really still do 2D animation in Japan, is Japan and Korea basically. So, but yeah, I made them watch that, and then rest of it I gave them softballs after that, but
that's fair.
Well, Paul, I know it's not your usual thing on your show, but can you tell us where we can find Flicks and Friends podcast?
If I read my little headline down here right, you can find us us, which, by the way, Parker had to tell me what my own handle was. So our handle is at F_F podcast, or you can literally just search for Flicks and Friends on all your podcasting ways of listening. I don't know how to word it. This isn't my steez. I just show up and talk shit and then leave usually. So we're on Instagram, X or Twitter, whatever the hell they call it now. I think we're on Facebook as well. I don't think we have a Threads. We're on TikTok. I know that Dustin does a lot of really fun little videos over there for our up and coming stuff. And like these guys, we post what we're about to do and all kind of, I think Dustin does giveaways and stuff. But Dustin is the guy. So he's the dad of the group. So dad tells us when we got to show up and do our chores. But yeah. that's all I got to say about that. So
yes, please check out the Flicks and Friends podcast. It's an amazing podcast. We've been honored to be guests. We've had Dustin on plenty of times. It's awesome to finally get Paul on the show. You guys run a really fun podcast over there. You guys, it just the fact that you guys literally always have differing opinions and differing minds and. Sean and everybody. Much, yeah. it's a great time. I just listened to, as of this recording, this won't be out until for a while, but as of this recording, you guys released your Blues Brothers episode with our friend Wyatt from Cinema Trip Reviews. And great episode.
I was very sick that day, so it was not happening for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just it's fun because your show is very similar to ours, where it's like everybody here has differing tastes for movies. Yes. You know, and it's great to bring all those minds together and talk about a movie. So yeah, all of the links to Flicks and Friends will be down in the description. So make sure to go over and check them out. As for us, you can find us on all the major podcast apps. You're listening to us right now, so clearly you know where we're at. But we're also on YouTube. Everything is at Dissect That Film, so that's where you'll find us. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, or if you're listening to us, go check out our YouTube and do the same thing. As for social media, I already mentioned it before. We're on all the major social media sites. So just go over there and type in Dissect That Film on any one of those. We're probably there. So there you go. And we're on Patreon at patreon.com/dissectthatfilm, where for a single dollar, you can get things like early access to episodes and bloopers and outtakes and fun stuff like that. And then at our $5 tier, we have a exclusive show called The Monster Zone, which is hosted by Dan and Angela, where we talk about monster movies, which is fun.
Yep.
And we're going to have a bunch of other fun stuff on the Patreon down the road.
You can vote for stuff too.
Oh yes. It's new. So I'm like, I keep forgetting.
At a dollar.
Yes. Every month at the dollar tier, you can vote on the movie we cover for the end of the month. We pick like three selections and you guys get to vote on what we do. So yeah, patreon.com/dissectthatfilm. Help support the show financially. And I'm going to go and I'm going to shout out everybody who is currently a patron. We have a new patron. I forgot. Oh my God. We have a new patron. We have Corey Morissette, a fantastic host of a podcast called And the Podcast Will Rock, which is an amazing Van Halen podcast that I have been a guest on. And he joined at the Mark Wahlberg Book Club tier, our $5 tier. So, Corey, welcome to the Patreon. We hope you enjoy the Monster Zone episodes that are there. And thank you for the support. We appreciate you very much.
Yeah, you don't need to bother reading. Just click on the pictures. We know where you're at. You're good.
As for other patrons, we have Charles. We have the Bucket of Chum, the Shark Movie Podcast. We have Official Joey C. We have Jason. We have Robert Stewart, Rudy 5453, Andrew Schoening, Eric Stein, the Baron's Hideout Podcast, Dan and Angela of DNA Gaming, Billy Joseph Jr., the Flicks and Friends Podcast, Doom Generation, and Johnny Blue. So thank you to all of our wonderful patrons. We appreciate you very much for all your support. And I think that's about it for us here. All of our personal links will be down in the description as always. And until next time, I am Professor Radican. Who are you guys?
Olivia. Flinger Hanger.
I'm Dawson, apparently.
Yes.
Fidget.
This is the first time we've ever done an outro like that.
Wait a minute, you're not crippled.
You can't see my legs.
Oh, no.
That's true. He doesn't even have legs. Yes.
one good
walking stick.
We are Dissect That Film, and this has been another episode of the Dissect That Film podcast. We'll see y'all again next time. Bye-bye.